This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there, and we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Carter, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
We're holding up. I'm curious. Yesterday, the weather's been awful, and you guys have been winning series, and that's really all anyone is after. But I don't know if it was the combination of Shota just not being Shota, having a rough go, which, again, probably weather-related. But I think that Justin Steele news kind of took everyone for a little bit of by surprise. Was this a pre-existing thing, or did he just come out of that start with a sore elbow?
Kind of both. Obviously, it's the same injury as last year, something that's been nagging him. So, that happens with players, where there's something that, kind of pops up here and there, throughout their careers. And Justin's no exception there. And, this one popped up. It's not something that had been hurting him in spring training. He'd been in a really good place. And, we're hopeful that we caught it early and that we'll be able to get him back here soon. And, that's why we're taking a conservative route here.
What is the level of concern, and is Jordan Wicks part of the plan to perhaps replace him for a start here or there?
Yeah, there's always concern when you're dealing with injuries with any player, especially somebody as talented as Justin. But, right now, all we got to do is figure out exactly what's going on in there and then, adjust as necessary. But this is something that almost every team is dealing with. And, we certainly, built up our starting pitching depth to be able to withstand things like this. And you got guys like Wicks, Colin Ray, obviously Javi Assad is going to be coming off the IL here, not imminently, but, soon, hopefully this month. And, then you got other guys in the minor leagues, your Cade Hortons of the world. And then,
right,
there's somebody that no one's thinking about that's going to be helping us out over the course of this year. So I think the answer is all of those guys are going to be part of the answer. And, with winning teams that go long into the season and into the off season, they have to have a lot of answers.
Obviously, an off day today. You guys traveling to California, and we know that that Justin wasn't scheduled to pitch until Sunday. Is there any chance that J-Mo could go? Because I think you're off next Thursday too. Do you not want to load up anybody early, or is there an opportunity to maybe take advantage of a couple of off days and try to get by without kind of starting someone unexpected?
Yeah, you certainly don't want to throw guys off of their routines if that's not something that you have to do. I think an interesting byproduct of the Japan series, if you look at our early schedule, there's a lot of off days, especially on Thursdays. It almost looks like a minor league schedule or the new minor league schedule, which is nice. That allows us to have some flexibility in how we go about maneuvering our pitching and our roster. And, from that perspective, we're glad that the schedule laid out this way, and we'll use that to our advantage as best as we can.
So let's talk about Matt Shaw for a moment, because I think there's a lot of focus on and hope that he is going to be the guy that is the everyday third baseman this season. He's not great at the plate so far, hitting just 170, but he is getting on base because he's walked 10 times. How do you balance one against the other Carter, and what are reasonable expectations for Matt Shaw, and also how much patience is the front office and maybe Craig Council going to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a broad scope, we're trying to win baseball games, and so we're going to try to make decisions to put our best team out there. But what Matt's done really well is he's played great defense, and I think there's a lot of encouraging signs at the plate. And I think you mentioned the plate discipline. That's certainly been good, his ability to get on base. And I think he's taking better swings, over the last week. And he's seen some really good arms. He's seen some really good arms and some really not great hitter-friendly weather. And, hopefully over the course of, the next weeks and months, that he'll be able to slow things down a little bit and get back to his natural talent. I expect that'll happen. But I think you look at all the young players around the league and just the adjustment it is to go up to the big league so quickly. It's really, really difficult. And I think the fact that we're seeing some progress here is encouraging, and we'll continue to play that out.
It isn't. You're right about the weather and everything going on early in the season. But, man, you guys have been killing the ball. It's been kind of fun to see you. I think it's 8 of the last 10 games or 9 7-run games, something crazy like that. You've been really able to put up some runs. You just needed the 7 yesterday, and everything would have been fine. But what's it like seeing that and knowing? I mean, we talked about it during spring training, how, everybody wants everyone to be hitting, and it doesn't matter till the season starts. Well, everybody's doing a pretty good job of hitting.
Yeah, it's been really encouraging early, and I think we've all realized that, sometimes these things can be feast or famine, and so really the only thing you can do is focus on the next game and making sure you try to just continue to have your best approach for the next game. And I think that's what guys have been doing, and then when we've had a tough game, we've come back and played well the next one. And I think that's just all you really can focus on in just long of a marathon of a season like this is. But yeah, to your point, it's been really encouraging. The ability to take walks, the ability to hit with runners in scoring position, the ability to drive the ball, it's all been going really well. And that means a lot of runs, and that typically leads to a lot of wins.
This is Mully and Haw. We're talking with Cubs general manager Carter Hawkins, who is appearing on behalf of Paws Chicago, whose mission is to build no-kill communities, to end overpopulation of homeless animals, and to transform animal welfare. One of those guys hitting the cover off the ball is Kyle Tucker. And certainly, Carter, you know how it goes when you have a guy entering the final year of his contract. The conversation has already begun about what he is worth and can he stay forever? Because that's what we want him to stay forever. What is the Cubs' policy? What is the approach with Kyle Tucker? Are you open for contract negotiations during the season? Is that something that's up to the player? Or what is your stance when we talk about the contract future for Kyle Tucker?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll repeat a lot of the stuff Jed said. We'll keep those conversations internal, whether they're happening or whether they're not happening. But I'll also repeat what Jed said, and that, he's a player you want to build around, and he's absolutely an elite hitter in this league and played a great defense as well, and he's carried our lineup, along with our catchers over the last couple of weeks, and, we'll expect to see that continue through the season, and, just thrilled that we have him on this club.
Crazy lot of money floating around, and we just saw another contract extension in Toronto and another big deal, and, you keep wondering, how big are these contracts getting? Do you have to move quicker because the more you wait, the bigger the contract? How do you judge that? How do you balance the kind of price of playing poker going up so exorbitantly?
Yeah, I mean, generally, you're trying to judge markets. You're trying to understand, are there certain positions, certain players that are overvalued or undervalued, and allocate your dollars appropriately, within those contexts. But, it's hard to judge markets. The guys that are doing it on Wall Street, are having a really hard time right now, and it's not too much easier over here in baseball either. So, yeah, I mean, those are conversations that we're constantly having, during the offseason, during the season, trying to understand where there might be some inefficiencies. And, we're just trying to make sure that, when we're spending money, that money is going towards wins, and that money is going towards wins in an efficient fashion. And there's a lot underneath that sentence, but that's really the goal.
So you have access to all the information, all the camera angles, all the stuff. You also have access to the players and what they're thinking and how they're feeling and what they might be dealing with that we're not aware of. Help us understand Ryan Pressly and the start that he's off to, because the numbers say that, you know what, it's acceptable, it's fine, and he's going to get better. There have been some shaky moments. There's no doubt about it. You can't get around it. He's here to close games. He's here to pitch the ninth inning. How would you describe the start he's off to, and is there anything that you see that can be or will be corrected?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about guys that are throwing the ninth, obviously there's a magnifying glass on that. And so they get talked about more, which, you know, is understandable, and that kind of comes with the territory with that. You know, I think the stuff has actually been pretty good relative to where he's been over time, and that part's encouraging to know that, hey, look, it's still in there. I think really for him, it's, you know, he's going to have some contact. He's going to have some balls put on the ground, and, you know, some of those balls are going to get through. I think for him, it's about ability to command and ability to get ahead, ability not to walk a guy and then have a hit on top of that is when really traffic starts happening. And that's really where it gets, you know, a little bit tight in the ninth inning, of course. So, you know, we're encouraged that the stuff is still there. You know, we're going to continue to try to work on helping to have him be able to land that stuff in an effective way as possible, and, you know, encouraged about his ability to help us out at the back end of games, and, you know that there's a lot of other guys that are supporting him as well. You know, I thought Porter Hodge was really, really good the other night, despite a couple of hits that just happened to be hitting to the corners, and same thing with Julian Merriweather. You're seeing Brad Keller, you know, start to establish himself as someone that potentially could help us out at the end of the games, and from that perspective, we'll just continue to try to put our best guys out there so that we can win as many games as we can.
Carter, we had a fun conversation with Tommy Hotovy recently where we were asking him his thoughts on the torpedo bats. You know, it just became this like rage and bait. Oh, look at the end with the torpedo bat. And he kind of laughed and said that with all the different pitches that are, you know, we're changing the names of some pitches we're familiar with, but there seems like every time you turn around, the pitching people are really coming up with something crazy and cool, and they're moving the ball and everything else. And he kind of joked that it's high time the hitters kind of responded. And what's your take on that torpedo bat stuff?
Yeah, I mean, so it's something that we've been working on for a long time, you know, maybe 2 years, and really hadn't been talking about it with anyone, obviously,
right?
Because we wanted to try to keep it to ourselves. And I think there was some kind of convergent evolution happening where some other teams were coming to some of the same conclusions. The funny part on the name piece, and I was laughing about this with our guys, is we had named ours a reverse taper bat, which, like, in retrospect, is just not the best marketing play.
Reverse taper? Did you say reverse taper
That's
bat?
That's what he said. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Rolls right off the tongue.
The taper. And then somebody started talking about torpedoes. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, we should have gone with torpedo. So the fact that we didn't hit 5 home runs in our, you know, in our first game, I think, and no one noticed it, and the fact that we called it reverse taper probably was why a lot of those articles were written about us. But, you know, look, like, this is such a fun game where you're always trying to find, you know, just 1% advantages, and, you know, I think these reverse taper bats or torpedo bats or bowling pin bats or whatever you want to call it is an opportunity to find some of that advantage. And, you know, we have some really, really smart people in our organization that work on things like that all the time. And, you know, just glad to see that, you know, yeah, the hitting side is finally punching back a little bit here in terms of innovation. And, you know, I expect that will continue to happen.
Well, I think one guy who's benefiting from whatever you want to call it, but Dansby Swanson has 4 home runs already and looks like he's got more power at the plate, Carter. And I just wonder, he also looks as fluid as ever in the field. The offseason core surgery, or however you want to describe that, how much difference did that make in allowing him to maybe be the player earlier this season than we have seen before? Because you look at him and he looks more dangerous to the plate. And I just wonder what effect that offseason surgery had.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Dansby, and, you know, certainly, you know, couldn't give you a specific number as to what, you know, what is driving, you know, him just looking a little bit better on the field over the course of this year. Obviously, he played great defense last year and actually put up a solid offensive season. But to your point, he's been really good, you know, this year thus far. And I have to imagine for him, just not having to play through pain every day, definitely just eases his mind and allows him to be the best version of himself.
Carter, he seemed to be tapering off last year. Now there's a reverse taper.
Exactly. See, not actually.
Now we can market it.
Now
we got a chance.
Yeah.
How many people experiment with it? I read somewhere that Bellinger was using it last year, and then obviously the Yankees are using it. How many people have been? I mean, do we expect to see more of it, or is it just kind of depend on the person and how comfortable they are with it?
Yeah, I would expect that we'll see more of it. I mean, it's kind of like all of us 20 years ago when, you know, you had that buddy that was like, hey, I got this thing called a Big Bertha, and it's like, it helps me hit it a little bit further. And you're like, ah, I like mine. It feels good. Like, I'm going to hit mine for a while. Then over time, you're like, ah, crap, like this guy's hitting it 20 yards farther than me every time. I think that'll happen over time as guys get used to it and it just becomes more prevalent throughout the league. So that'd be my expectation. My expectations aren't always right, but I imagine it'll go that direction.
Carter, let's talk about Michael Busch for a second, because on one hand, I see a guy who is an ascending player. First base, his defense has gotten really good. He's the cleanup hitter. And I don't know if we look at the way we look at cleanup hitters the way we used to look at cleanup hitters, because if we did that, I don't think that the cleanup hitter 20 years ago, 10 years ago, might have been pinch hit for in the fifth inning because of a matchup on the mound. Michael Busch has been a guy that I think, you know, has run into that a couple times this season already. How valuable is he to this team? Do you understand kind of like maybe sometimes the confusion we see from the outside when the guy is pinch hit for if he's batting cleanup, and you think, how could you do that in that spot? I guess, what is the overall philosophy when that happens, and what, how much do you value his offensive abilities?
Yeah, I mean, kind of a two-part answer here. I think one, focusing on Michael Busch, you know, he is extremely valuable, right? You talked about his defense already. You know, he's have just consistent at bats. You know, he's been able to drive the baseball. You know, he is, you know, an above average first baseman for us. And from that perspective, you know, to have him, you know, to have him under control for as long as we do, we are thrilled to have him. So I think that's, you know, park Michael Busch for a second. I think the second question you're asking is, okay, like with traditional lineup spots, like in doing untraditional things with those lineup spots, like why would you do something like that? And the short answer is, you know, you feel like that's going to help you win the game more effectively. So if, you know, we feel like Justin Turner is going to hit a left-handed pitcher or someone else is going to hit a left-handed pitcher, a specific left-handed pitcher better than a specific left-handed hitter, and we're in a high leverage situation like that, we're going to make that move. So the decision there is, you know, hey, in this particular situation, this player is better, this other player is better. But in general, you know, we feel like the other guy is really, really, really good. So, yeah, I think it's different, right? And I think I can understand why, you know, someone would say, hey, why would that be happening if that guy's a cleanup hitter? But the short answer is, in this specific example or this specific situation, this is the best way for us to try to win this baseball game, and that's why we do it.
You know, all the talk is, as David mentioned, about Kyle Tucker, King Tuck, what he can do. I've really enjoyed seeing Matthew Boyd. I've really enjoyed Carson Kelly. It feels like some of the guys you added have maybe exceeded my expectations. Probably not
John
yours.
Birdie?
Yeah, John Birdie, fast.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we liked those guys, or else we wouldn't have given them so much money. But you know, from that perspective, yeah, we're encouraged by their starts. They've fit, you know, seamlessly into the clubhouse, and you know, to your point, have really, really done well early in the year. And you know, look, it's extremely early, and we have a long way to go. But the way those guys go about their business, you know, the way they prepare for each game, my expectations is, you know, that we'll be in a really good place with them going forward, and excited that we have them.
It is extremely early, but heading into yesterday's game, I believe the Cubs led the majors in runs scored, stolen bases, and walks. So from your perspective, when you look at this team offensively, what is its strength?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, right? Like, we're looking to score runs. How are we going to do that better than other teams? Well, probably not going to hit more home runs than other teams or than all of the teams. We'll be up there. We got some guys that can really drive the baseball, but got a lot of fast guys, a lot of smart guys, a lot of intelligent guys that are really going to play every game 100%. You've seen all those plays we've had early where, you know, runner on first and he beats out a forced play at second. That extends an inning. That gives us an opportunity to score more runs. You've seen us steal bases. You've seen us take extra bases. I think that aggression, that pressure definitely allows us to create more runs either through getting more outs or just, you know, being able to advance guys. And I think you've seen our ability to really put pressure on the pitcher by making them come into the zone, by taking balls that are, you know, an inch or 2 inches off the plate. You know, you watch some of the teams have been really, really good over the last several years, and their hitters are able to do that. You know, we'll play a Dodgers team this weekend. Their hitters are really good at doing that and make you come into the zone. And if you can be patient and make pitchers make mistakes, you got an opportunity to capitalize on them. So, yeah, I think it's those things, and, you know, encouraged about the early results so far.
I always wonder when I see a guy who hits rather unconventionally, like Matthew Shaw's stance, is that more difficult for a hitting coach to work with a guy? Does that take extra work? Does that take extra kind of, it's just such an odd stance. We've certainly seen other guys with that kind of stance, but I just wonder, what is that a hitting coach's nightmare?
I don't know, nightmare. Probably enjoy it for sure in terms of just, you know, having something else to think about. You know, the thing about hitters is they all get back to similar positions after their load, right? So right. The stance is kind of a comfort position to where they start. I mean, think about Craig Counsell, right? Like where he started. Like his position, if you freeze framed it as the pitch is starting to be released from the pitcher, is going to look very similar to all other hitters. And so the path to get to that, you know, that convergent position for all hitters is a little bit more difficult if you have a little bit more unorthodox stance, but it's still the same thing. So I think for a hitting coach and for that hitter, it's just, okay, how are you going to get from this place of comfort to this next place of success that looks like what all successful hitters do? And yeah, that's a little bit more difficult, but it's offset by the comfort that it gives the hitter.
All right, Carter, so earlier you referenced Big Bertha. We are distracted in the studio here because we're watching the Masters. Is there a Masters pool in the Cubs front office, and do you have a prediction for who's going to win this weekend?
If there's a Masters pool, I was left out of it. I probably had my head in the computer a little bit too much over the last couple of weeks to know what's going on there. But in terms of who is going to win, the chatter down in the clubhouse was that Rory hasn't looked as good as he looked unbelievable relative to how he's typically gone into the Masters. So I'm going to give him that one. And if we win that one, I wish I would have been in the pool.
Great stuff. Carter, thanks a ton. Great catching up. You really appreciate it.
Thanks, Carter.
Yeah, likewise, fellas. Take care.
That's a lot of fun. That's Carter Hawkins.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Well, I'm hanging in there. Looks like I will broadcast for the first time in a few days today. So the voice is slowly creeping back. You'll have to excuse it. I don't know what happened. I just kind of lost it in Cleveland.
Yeah, you weren't alone. It felt like the season kind of went that way. What an awful to lose in the two of the three games in the fashion in which they did, and then to get swept and to be in an eight-game losing streak. You know, we know that they lost a lot of games in a row a year ago, but they didn't get to eight until I think the end of May, and I don't know. It just feels rough, Steve. It feels like this team's really struggling to score.
Well, there's a couple of different things. Number one, you know, you lose Lee and yep. Tauchman in one fell swoop. Benintendi was already on the ropes, and now he's going to be on the disabled list. So this team is waiting for Rojas to come back, and don't know when that's going to happen. They've lost a few players. Brian Ramos at times looked to me like he was ready to take over, perhaps as an everyday third baseman. As we know, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Drew Thorpe had Tommy John surgery. So there's a litany of injuries to this team. And if you're not particularly deep, and this White Sox team was not deep, then these injuries are tough to fight your way through. And that's one of the things that's happening. And, of course, we knew offensively there would be a problem, and we're seeing it play out in real time.
Well, they hope to address that by bringing up Chase Mydroth from Charlotte. He was hitting very well down there, Steve, in a small sample size, nine games, but he showed some pop at the plate that he didn't show in spring training, frankly, with three home runs. I don't know if he can be a catalyst. I don't know where he plans to bat, but I hope they plan to play him. What impact can he make on a lineup that needs some oomph?
Well, he's a guy that will make some contact, put the ball in play. And, you know, I was reading a wonderful article this morning because I like to keep up on what's happening in baseball. And the article was on Juan Soto. And he was talking about how he developed his two-strike approach and how he has one of the best eyes in baseball. But it's not by accident. It's by design. And he changes everything when he has two strikes. He chokes up on the bat. That's an easy part. But he also changes where he puts his feet. He changes his stride, and his goal is to put the ball in play. Can you imagine that? Wanting to put the ball in play? What a novel concept! So this is one of the great hitters in our game today, who has established himself as having maybe the best eye in baseball. But he was talking about how they talked to him when he first came up about the Nationals' whole organization striking out too much. And he took it upon himself to redesign what he was doing, and it worked out really well. But when you see that and you know that it's possible, and then he talks about having to adjust because the game is different. He said these guys aren't close to what they were in 2018. He was talking about pitchers. He said you might see one guy throw 100, and you might have one guy on a team. He said now they keep trotting him out of the bullpen, the occasional starting pitcher, and they throw 100. And he said he had to adjust because the pitchers had adjusted. They're bigger, stronger, they throw harder. So he made an adjustment. And in the same research session that I had, because I've had plenty of time to do these things lately, I was reading about Jacob DeGrom, who is throwing about 96.7 miles an hour on his fastball. And he says he can throw harder, but he's decided that if he throws at that speed, varies his speed, he could actually possibly stay on the field. Another remarkable concept. You mean you can't throw every pitch as hard as you want to and expect to stay healthy? Wow, that's revolutionary. Well, it's called pitching, and that's what we're seeing more guys with the light turning on and saying, you know what? They've been doing this for a long time. They used to pitch on four-man rotations. These pitchers used to throw 300 innings, and they were smaller, and they didn't have the exercise facilities that the guys have today. They didn't have near as many strength coaches. They didn't do the things they're doing today, and yet they threw 300 innings. Today, if they get to 200, they want to give them a medal. So it's a whole different philosophy, and I understand that some of these guys are starting to figure out that not everything that happened, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago was bad, and not everything they're doing today is good. There's some place in between that in order to stay on the field, you're going to have to get to, and some of these guys are actually getting there.
I guess I look at it and I keep wondering, you know, and I don't want to be rude about it or anything, but when you see a guy like Colson Montgomery struggling as he is, and I think his average is at like 0.88 right now, it just makes you wonder if all of these so-called prospects are just that, are 50-50 chances. And how many are going to hit and how many aren't going to hit? And when you're relying on all of this sort of eventual arrival to solve all woes, how long does that take?
Well, look, Mully, I mean, you hit it right on the head. This is not an exact science. You could draft a guy 1-1, or you could draft him in the 18th round, and you really don't know what's going to happen. Mark Burley was a 38th round draft pick. I mean, this was a guy, and I talked to his father, and I said to his dad, could you have envisioned your son having this kind of career? And he said, Steve, I was hoping he could pick up a spot in the bullpen, maybe. Get a couple of years in, you know, and it would be great. We would be very happy. So you don't really know when you draft these guys, and whether it's Colson Montgomery or anybody else, they will develop or not develop in a time frame that eventually, you know, their first team that signs them might run out of patience and they move on. How many times have you seen these guys on their fourth team, all of a sudden everything clicks, and these guys start to hit, and they start to hit or they start to pitch, and they never stop. So you don't really know. You don't know what the catalyst is going to be. And it's a difficult proposition to draft, sign, and develop these guys and expect that they're going to get it done consistently because you just don't know. And it takes a lot of talent in your organization with your scouting and development people. It takes a lot of work on the part of the guy that you're drafting. It takes a lot of things. And you also have to have an element of luck. You have to stay uninjured because if you're injured, you can't get any better. And so, you know, the Sox have had an inordinate amount of injuries. Guys, I will tell you, it's not the strength and conditioning people. It's not the trainers. Right now, it looks like there's a curse. Obviously, I don't believe that that's the case, but I will tell you that there is an inordinate amount of injuries to a thin organization to begin with, and it's stopping this team from performing the way that they envisioned. I mean, if you look at what the lineup was supposed to be as it was envisioned, it's not close to what it is now.
Steve, in the final moments we have remaining, I want to ask you about Sunday's matchup because it's a good one. Garrett Crochet against Shane Smith, if both teams are pitching who they're expected to pitch. Shane Smith has been, I think, a revelation. We've talked about him before, but he's now gone out and give two pretty strong starts. What is he doing well? How impressed have you been?
I've been really impressed. I mean, this is a Rule 5 guy, and granted, he was the first pick in the Rule 5. I'm not sure what Milwaukee was thinking about, but I will tell you that this stuff is legitimate top-of-the-rotation stuff. He's not doing it with mirrors. He's doing it with overwhelming stuff. That changeup is outstanding. He's throwing his fastball where he wants to. It has late life to it. you know, there's a lot of ways to get to 97 for pitchers. There's some guys that go all out. They're straining everything they can to get to 97. There's no movement on it. Because velocity, boys, come from the shoulder. The faster you can rotate the shoulder, the higher the velocity. But movement comes from the wrist and the forearm. You put that little extra pop at the end, and you'll get movement on the ball. And movement is what fools hitters. Velocity doesn't fool hitters. Hitters have eyes like computers. They know exactly what velocity you're throwing, and if it doesn't move, they're going to tattoo it. His moves. Everything that Shane Smith throws moves. He's been very impressive so far. Again, I'm very happy that for whatever reason, Milwaukee ran out of room on their 40-man and exposed him, and the Sox took a look and said, you know, this guy's pretty good. As it turned out, he's better than pretty good. He's outstanding. He's throwing like a number one. If this continues, I mean, he's going to have a very nice career, but there's a long way to go. You can't get too excited after two starts, but from what I've seen, this guy's legitimate top of the rotation starter.
Steve, I was watching, I think it was Chuck and Ozzie talking about him, and Chuck was saying that he asked him, like, where the changeup? He taught himself the changeup. He began that pitch, like, in the last year, just looking at different guys and checking out stuff. Did you ever teach yourself a pitch? How hard is that to do?
It's very hard to do. In fact, I spent 14 years in professional baseball, 12 in the major leagues, and I'm going to be 78. I'm still looking to throw a changeup. I can't throw one. I could never throw one. And I did everything you could think of. I mean, I split my fingers. I was looking to add fingers somewhere. Nothing worked. And so, look, the key to a changeup is very simple. It's very simple to talk about, very difficult to do. You use the same release point and the same arm velocity as your fastball. But somewhere with finger pressure or splitting your fingers or doing whatever you're going to do, you're able to take something off the ball without alerting the hitter that you're slowing the pitch down. The best I've ever seen with finger pressure was Greg Maddux. He was outstanding. He could change the finger pressure and make the ball do whatever he wanted to do. But there was one of him, and he won 355 games. But to teach yourself a changeup that's as effective as this is, I would say that's a monumental achievement. And I just hope it stays there, and I hope he keeps experimenting, because that's what I use my side session for. I knew what I did well. I knew what I did poorly. I worked on the things I did poorly. I touched on the things I did well. But I always experimented here and there, because I was trying every day to make myself a half a percent better. Just a half a percent. Find something. Do something that you haven't done. And maybe you'll luck into a changeup as Smith did.
Well, we hope you feel 100% better when you get back in the booth tonight.
There you go. Great stuff, Steve. Thanks a ton. Great catching up.
Thanks, guys. It was great to be able to talk again. Talk to you later.
Take care, Steve.
That's Steve Stone, White Sox
playing
TV
hurt.
Analyst on CHS.
Yeah, playing hurt.
Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, I really appreciate getting a chance to talk to you, Brad, because a lot of the stuff that you're writing about, you had a question in the mailbag where someone wanted to know if there are scenarios that haven't really been discussed about who the Bears could take with the 10th overall pick. And I found that really interesting, because we had a conversation recently where we were talking about just different ideas, kind of outside the box stuff. And we got into the corners a little bit, and you talk about the cornerback situation. And, you know, I don't know how to feel. I don't think they're giving up on Tyreek Stevenson. I don't believe that, but I do think that this is a super important year for a guy that was shaky a bit last year, ran afoul of some trouble, obviously was benched after the incident with the Hail Mary pass in Washington, and then did not take well to that and seemed to really be impacted by it. So, you know, hopefully new staff, new coaches, they can get to him, they can get the best out of him. But Jalen Johnson is going to be apparently running around the field guarding the best receiver. Good idea. And I don't know if we believe that Tyreek Stevenson is going to be the guy that maybe they thought he was when they moved up and drafted him.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because they've got some depth at the cornerback position. And if they sell the idea that they believe new secondary coach Al Harris can bring the very best out of a young and talented Tyreek Stevenson, you know what? I'd sit back and watch that. Like, I'd be open-minded about him being able to play with more consistency. The question I got in the mailbag was, is there a scenario for that 10th pick that maybe hasn't been publicly discussed or kicked around in right. the media or has gone under the radar a little bit? I would have a high level of confidence that inside the building, the Bears are there are no like under the radar possibilities, that everything is being evaluated, which is a process that's ongoing. But in my answer to the question, I said, well, you know, one possibility, and I'm not saying it's a likelihood, but here's something we haven't heard a lot about. What about a cornerback at 10? Because at 10, potentially, you're taking the second cornerback in the class after Travis Hunter, who's a cornerback and a wide receiver. And if your grade on a cornerback that's available at that point, Will Johnson from Michigan could be a possibility, is considerably higher than what you've got on an edge rusher or a potential offensive lineman that might be able to, you know, play tackle, and you're going to remain true to your grading system, well, maybe you go with a corner there. And then, you know, if you feel like you've got a really top-flight corner coming out of the draft, well, I mean, you get that position really locked down then, and you've also got some depth.
So, Brad, the players reported back to Hallis Hall on Monday for the beginning of the offseason program, and we heard from many of them a day later. What, if anything, held any significance to you based on what you heard from some of the Bears?
Well, I mean, I'd listen to Jalen Johnson, folks. You know, I would advise fans and other members of the media probably to listen to Jalen Johnson when he pointed out that he's been through the off-season hype, and he knows what that looks like, and that doesn't mean a thing in the regular season. We've talked on the program about the Bears hanging off-season championship banners inside the Walter Payton Center, right? They're running out of room in the rafters. You've got to go out and you got to play better during the season. You got to play more consistently, and you've got to win more football games. So I thought Jalen Johnson kept it real, and there is reason for optimism here. I like the head coaching hire a lot. I'm intrigued by some of the guys on Ben Johnson's staff. The moves in free agency and otherwise, trades to fortify the roster have made sense, but they've got to get better through the draft. They've got to get some impact players through the draft. They've got to draft and develop their young players, and they've got to get a better and stronger roster as well.
So we had this.
One more, and then. Like, I saw some people kind of made a big deal about Tremaine Edmonds saying, you know, they're in win-now mode.
Yeah.
Let's let's just press the pause button here and evaluate this. You've got a player saying they're in win-now mode. Like, if a player says anything other than that, it's newsworthy.
Well, then that's what Jalen Johnson is saying. He's saying, well, I'm not that excited. You shouldn't be that excited. We're just going to disappoint you anyway.
But a player saying we're in win-now mode? Yeah, of course you're in win-now mode.
Tremaine Edmonds did not say just we're in win-now mode. He said that Ben Johnson entered the room. You liked what you heard. He gets it, and he's the guy that we believe in.
Well, of course they believe in him, and they believed in Eberflus until he wasn't the coach anymore.
I want you to tell Bears are leading the league in offseason victories. I don't need the leaders of the Bears to tell me to tone things down because it's too much hype. I want them to believe that they're one season away from going to the playoffs, or they're one season they're in win now mode. I want to hear that from the players.
Did you buy into the Justin Fields is my quarterback when they were, you know, three quarters of the way through the 2023 season, and it was abundantly clear to anyone without Kool-Aid glasses on that he wasn't going to be the quarterback of the Bears? I mean, did you want to hear that too?
That's a different scenario. That was in season. We had evidence. When you're starting a new regime, I'm okay with over-the-top optimism from players who are in there and believing that they're capable of things that they may not have done before.
I'm cool with him saying that, but it's like people look, they're in win-now mode. Well, yeah, of course the player's going to say they're in win-now mode. Let's see what they do in the draft. Let's see what things look like this summer. And we'll hopefully look a heck of a lot better. And they'll hopefully be a heck of a lot more competitive and won't fall into the kind of traps and ruts that just destroyed this past season.
I had no problem with the Bears staying with Braxton Jones last year, because he still had a couple of years left on his contract, and you didn't know what you had on your offensive line. They made some moves, and they came out and said the offensive line was going to be better than ever and all that. But the reality is that they've now brought in three new starters on the interior of that line, and they've got a right tackle they drafted and believe in, and the left tackle will not be able to start training camp. He's going to be added as the year goes on. And maybe they're shooting for the season opener with him. I don't know how quickly he will be up and running, but it does worry me both that he is injured right now and that his contract runs out at the end of the year. And I think it makes it more critical than ever to get a left tackle. Now, I want to ask you about who that would be if you believe that Will Campbell would be there at 10, if he's moving or if he's set there. And I want to get your take on Armand Membau, the kid from Mizzou.
The right tackle.
You're familiar with him. Played right tackle in college, but there are people that believe he might be able to play on the left side in the NFL. That seems like a real reach.
It'd be a tough experiment, though.
Well, I got you, but it's going to be tough if you can't start the season with Braxton Jones.
Yeah, I'm not. Let's not rule Braxton Jones out for the start of training camp yet. Like, let's just That's a long ways off. I'd be so open minded. Obviously, he's not going to be full strength this spring, but with camp a long ways off, we'll see where that is. It's an interesting situation because if Will Campbell's not there, and some teams are evaluating Will Campbell as a guard, what are you going to do with Membau? Listen, there are teams that are looking at him. More teams looking at him as a guard than as a left tackle. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah,
because a lot of times these college programs, when they've got a guy that's played right tackle for them, they're telling you without telling you that the guy's not a left tackle in the NFL.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
That's why, Tevin Jenkins was a right tackle at Oklahoma State and he was not cut out to play left tackle in the National Football League. So it's interesting because it's not like there was this super left tackle candidate that was available in free agency, that they weren't able to get Ronnie Stanley re-signed with the Baltimore Ravens. I think they're aware of the issue there. Are there potentially some guys they could get in round two that would fit there? Josh Connerly of Oregon. I don't know how they feel about Josh Simmons out of Ohio State, who's coming off a knee injury.
Kelvin Banks.
You hear some up and down things about him. I don't think it's their plan. I would be curious if they've completely ruled out the idea of using Joe Tooney at left tackle. I don't know. I highly doubt that's plan A.
Yeah, I hope that's not plan A.
It might be plan B, but is it something that you can't discount? So we'll have to see. But, you know, when you get Drew Dahlman, who in my opinion is the big addition on the offensive line, you get Tooney, you get Jonah Jackson, and you're, you know, given the appearance that you're intent on building it from the inside out, you know, can you really say you've fully committed to it when you basically flipped a couple mid to late round picks and made one big signing without using a high draft pick on your offensive line? Like, do you have to do that to kind of follow through on that process?
Good stuff, Brad. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you, buddy. Great catching up.
Have a great day, guys.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Abdul Carter's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, told Adam Schefter of ESPN that the stress reaction in Carter's foot is healing, has improved since it was checked, and will not require surgery. How could the news affect the draft? Will it affect the Bears?
Well, Dr. Rosenhaus did put that out there yesterday, that everything was going to be fine with Abdul Carter. I would want to see the medicals. I would still want to have my own team doctors give a very thorough examination of Abdul Carter to know whether or not he would be a candidate for surgery. How long will this stress reaction in his foot linger? Is it something that's going to go away? Or will it require surgery and a screw inserted in his foot? These are big questions. If there are no concerns, then he will be one of the top three players selected. That could affect the Bears in a couple different ways. If it is the Giants, then they will still they will take him off the board. But you wonder how many quarterbacks will be affected by that if they take Abdul Carter at three rather than a quarterback. And if they take him at three, does that mean the Browns took a quarterback? The way that this all affects the Bears is obviously at 10, you would like for there to be one quarterback taken. If there's one quarterback taken before you draft, you wonder if your pick will be up for auction if you're Ryan Poles. So someone will come down and trade up to get to put themselves in a position to draft the second quarterback. If there are two quarterbacks taken ahead, then you're probably in a very enviable spot. If there's three, you're in a perfect spot. Abdul Carter going third to the Giants would mean that there's less likely of a chance of there being three. Jackson Dart wouldn't ascend that high. And you're probably right, business as usual. So it does have effect on the Bears. Abdul Carter, to me, is the most pivotal player in the first round because of the first 10 picks being all affected by where he goes. And he also could have the highest ceiling of any player drafted, provided he stays healthy.
David, I thought you put it excellent there, Dr. Rosenhaus telling Adam Schefter. I mean, it's just, you know, classic representation, right, of a guy. I was of the opinion, and we talked about this once or twice, probably either in the pick six or the extra point, that unless the foot was really, really bad in the medicals, I think even like surgery and a pin being placed in, I'm not saying I would have wanted the Bears to have done this. I still believe he would have been picked before the Bears picked at 10. Now, it might have been 7 or 8. Somebody might have come up, but I still think he was going top 10. My concern now for the Bears and how this all plays out on, what is it, the 24th, so 2 weeks from yesterday is the NFL draft up in Green Bay, is that I'm worried there might only be one quarterback selected before the 10th pick, which means that better position. You know, the Bears are not in need of a quarterback. I think that's what we know that. They're not taking a quarterback at 10. They're not going to do that. But if only one quarterback goes, and that would be with the number one pick, all of a sudden, one of those best available players, it's a notch down. Now, best case scenario is somebody does move up for the quarterback, plural, and all of a sudden three quarterbacks go in the top nine, and now all of a sudden the Bulls, or the Bears rather, are sitting in kind of a catbird seat, if you will, and then they just have to make the right pick.
I love this kind of stuff. I love kind of playing fantasy football with it, because one of the things that could happen, Dustin, if a quarterback isn't taken and there is only one off the board, like one of the teams that passed on a quarterback, let's say at three, might be willing to try to trade up and get one at 10. And if there's a run on the bank where a bunch of teams are kind of in that position, then all of a sudden you're going to get something of value. And you might be able to move down, still get a really good player. And then the strength of the draft is in those middle rounds. You pick up an extra pick there, you might get someone who could really help your team. So we'll see how that works out. I think that as far as just the Abdul Carter news is concerned, I think he's going to go before the Bears pick, one way or another. I don't think he's going to last till 10. And so I think that that's probably a guy that you're, you know, when you put this stuff together, you say, well, this guy can fall provided they take him and they take him. So as long as he's taken, then you don't really, there's not a really strong decision to have to make. But I'm always interested in how the quarterbacks are evaluated, because there are definitely, the value of the position is so high that those guys tend to be overdrafted. And since you don't need one, I'm all for the idea of three of them going in the first 10. And that just drops a better player to you that you would definitely take there. But I don't know how they feel about a trade down. It makes sense to me. Still get a pretty good player, but we'll have to see how it turns out. I the more quarterbacks taken early in a draft, the better it is for a team that took one last year. That's kind of my take on it. And I don't think Abdul Carter will be there. If he was, it'd be a miracle. But I think somebody will take a chance with him, and I think that he'll be gone too. So that's how it impacts the Bears. It's another guy perhaps moving toward them. And I really hope they get a good player. And I will say again, I'm not done with the line of scrimmage. I want them to continue to take players on the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball. That's it.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.